Honor will convene. Judge Green, what's that? Judge Green, come on up. Case number 277, the emergency of the Constitution, that is due. Phyllis, you're not there, thank you for the economy.
Before we get started, I was hoping it's kind of a sad day for the ICA family, because we've lost a respected colleague. So I was wondering if all of you would join me in just observing a moment of silence to remember with respect and appreciation the Honorable John S.W. Lim. Thank you. Mr. Inaka, are you ready to proceed?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The question in this case is whether the pipe found during the search incident to arrest for contraband, which the trial court subsequently suppressed as recovered pursuant to an illegal search, is now admissible under a simultaneous arrest for which the officer either had no probable cause or elected not to act thereon. If you look at this case, there are three layers to it in the analysis given by the trial court. First, we would submit that Officer Conashiro's illegal search revealed Christian Diaz's real name, and that simultaneously cast doubt on the original probable cause that he had to arrest the Kavika Silva under the fake name for the driving without license. Second, despite the probable cause that existed for the DWAL arrest of Kavika Silva, Conashiro's indecision to arrest in order to effectuate an illegal search of the truck, which again revealed Christian Diaz's real name, then cast doubt on the probable cause for that original driving without license arrest.
Are we supposed to apply the objective or subjective test in evaluating probable cause in this case?
Defense would submit that you are to apply, that Officer Conashiro should have applied an objective test, because it was clear that he had probable cause to arrest when the Kavika Silva person said, "Don't have a license," or "I don't have a license on me." But an officer kind of show recognized that, but he said, "I hadn't decided yet whether or not to arrest him."
Right, but your test is subjective, and all we should look at is whether or not, under the objective facts, there was probable cause to arrest the driver. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
If the driver is driving the car and says, "I don't have a license and I can't produce one," why isn't that probable cause to arrest the driver, regardless of whether he gives a fake name or not?
It is probable cause to arrest, but Officer Conashiro has discretion to either cite him or arrest him. And basically, he was making that decision, should I cite this man or should I arrest him?
Well, did he ever make a decision to cite him?
Apparently, he did not not for a long time did he make a decision to do anything. And he instead used that delay during the period of indecision to do a number of things that the lower court found illegal. First of all, he asked Mr. Diaz Acas Silva to get out of his truck. Now, under Ballesteros, yes, you can ask a person out of your truck, but as I carefully read Ballesteros, Mr. Ballesteros, Officer Stafford in that case, actually said to Mr. Ballesteros, "You're arrested. Please exit the truck." And the exit occurred pursuant to that decision to arrest. So the decision to arrest was already there. And then it diverged, the facts in Ballesteros diverged from our case.
You're saying subjectively it does matter whether the officer was going to cite for arrest. I thought earlier you said it's just an objective test as to whether there's probable cause to arrest. I think Judge Watanabe is asking, does it matter subjectively whether the officer would have arrested or not for the driving without a license violation? Because otherwise, if it just objectively, was there probable cause to arrest? I mean, I think the answer is there was probable cause to arrest.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not following the court's question with regard to the subjective.
Right. Well, why don't we take it step by step? Okay. Well, why don't you explain why you don't think objectively there's probable cause to arrest a driver for driving without a license?
Okay. You see the person driving. You pull him over to the side of the road for the speeding in this case. You ask him for his driver's license, registration, that kind of information. The man says, I don't have a driver's license.
Right, so that's a violation. Right?
So that's a violation. The officer has the discretion to either cite him and let him go on his way or to arrest him. And, you know,
right, but he has, at this point, he has probable cause to arrest.
He does have probable cause to arrest. But his decision is based on other factors such as, you know, whether he thinks that the gentleman's going to appear in court, you know, whether he, for example, if he finds, you know, warrants outstanding or other kinds of things like that.
Focusing on probable cause to arrest, mm-hmm. Does it matter whether or not when the officer finds out later that the guy gave him a fake name? Does that affect whether he has probable cause to arrest a driver for driving without a license?
No, it doesn't affect.
All right, so in this case, you're conceding that the officer had probable cause to arrest the driver for driving without a license, period.
He had the probable cause to arrest the man identified as Kavika Silva, but pursuant to what the officer subsequently did, he discovered that that wasn't the man's real name.
All right, what does it matter whether the driver gives you a fake name or not? He's still driving without a license. You have probable cause to arrest the driver, correct?
You have probable cause to arrest the driver.
All right, so what does it matter whether he finds out later on that the driver gave him a false name before effecting the arrest? Why does that change whether he has probable cause to arrest the driver?
Because I would submit that in order for a reasonable and prudent officer to do his job, he should check to make sure that this person, under the correct name or the second name that he receives, doesn't have a valid license. And he didn't make that check.
Isn't it reasonable to infer that if you stop someone and they tell you, I don't have a license, that the person doesn't have a license and therefore is violating the statute prohibiting driving without a license? Regardless of the name. I don't see why the name makes a difference.
Because if, as this case came down to, the arrest hinges on the validity of that single arrest, it has to go with whether there was probable cause to arrest. And when the officer didn't check to make sure that the Christian Diaz that he now knew was standing before him didn't have a valid driver's license, then there's a question as to whether the probable cause still obtained.
If we find there was probable cause, then do you lose the case?
No, because the arrest on the driving without license is inextricably tied to the illegal arrest for the drugs based on the search. Basically, the officer, if he had made his decision right at the get-go, found out the man didn't have a license and said, okay, I decided I'm going to arrest you. I'm not going to cite you. Okay, so he starts the arrest procedure. And then he delays and does other things, such as gets the consent to search the truck or does some other illegal action. He's already been arrested. That's already been effectuated. We wouldn't be standing here because the arrest was completed. The case, the case was completed. If the trial court chooses to sever the illegal actions of the officer post arrest, that wouldn't affect the driving without license case. But in this case, what happened is that he hadn't made that decision, so the illegality occurred in between during this period of indecision, and then at the end when the officer says, okay, I'm going to arrest you now for the illegal drugs they found in the truck as well as for the driving without license, that's all tied in there, that the court can't separate that out.
All right, what if the officer testifies that I would have arrested him anyway, independent of the finding of the drugs? In other words, even if I didn't find any drugs in the search, I still would have arrested for driving without a license. Does that validate the search incident to arrest?
Assuming that statement comes at the very end, after the illegal drugs were found?
What if he testifies to that? Didn't testify at trial that I arrested him for driving without a license?
He testified at trial that he arrested him for driving without a license, which we would submit is actually an incorrect statement of what actually happened. I understand that he was under the motion to suppress, unable to talk about the illegal search and seizure that he committed. However, he did not testify that he was undecided to arrest him for a period of time, and then he ultimately decided to arrest on the driving without license.
So you're saying we should just disregard his undisputed testimony at trial?
That's what we had asked for in the on the briefing, because it's clear that...
On what basis?
Because it's...
Just because you don't think he testified honestly or correctly, or...
Well, basically because his original trial testimony, explains about this period of indecision. The suppression hearing talks about this period of indecision, which I think is critical to the arguments that we have here today, where I understand that since the motion to suppress was granted, the police officer was instructed not to talk about his actions, searching the truck and finding the drugs, etc. However,
I think he fudged the trial.
Correct.
He couldn't say, I arrested him for drugs, so he said,
that's correct,
I arrested him for driving without a license, even if that's not true?
That's correct. Because actually, if you look at the testimony in the motion to suppress, he says that he arrested him. And that testimony about having arrested Mr. Diaz came immediately after the discovery of the drugs in the fanny pack. Doesn't say what the arrest was for. Obviously, since he's charged with driving without license, that was included in there. But his decision to arrest was tied into the finding of the drugs in the fanny pack. So as soon as he found those drugs, boom, Mr. Diaz was arrested.
In a driving without a license type of case, I'll just follow up on Judge Nakamura's question, but why should the police officer exercise his discretion to issue a citation or arrest if a person doesn't have a driver's license and should not be on the road?
The statute has given him that discretion. It's up to him to choose what he feels is appropriate in the situation.
Objectively, wouldn't a reasonable officer have arrested the guy? First of all, the person has no ID. Mm-hmm. He suspects he's given him a fake name. He doesn't have a license. So, what reasonable officer would let him get back into the car after citing him and drive away? Isn't that reasonably, don't you think a reasonable officer in the officer's situation does almost have to arrest them in the situation?
A reasonable officer might do that, but the problem is that Officer Conoscero testified that he didn't immediately arrest him. He hadn't decided what to do.
Right, he hadn't decided, but he didn't say that I was going to cite him and let him go.
That's correct.
Independent of finding the drugs.
Right.
Independent of finding drugs, he knows that there's no license in the name given by this guy. Mm-hmm. He gives him a random warning, and he sees the guy kind of sort of balk when he's trying to initial the fake name, and he's suspicious about that. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get any driver's he doesn't know who the registered owner of the car is, because the driver tells him, it's not my car, I borrowed it. In that situation, is the police officer going to just write a citation to someone he thinks has given him a fake name and let him drive away?
He has the discretion to do that. Not saying that an officer would do that, but he has the option to do that. And that the problem with his statement about and his actions, that I had not decided to arrest Mr. Diaz Silva, whatever his name was, that is problematic for us.
Can you expand on that? Why is it problematic?
Basically, the trial court found that he used that indecision to go on a fishing expedition. He was suspicious. He had an officer's hunch that this guy was hiding information or drugs or something, because as Judge Nakamura pointed out, when he was shining the flashlight in the interior cab, he would shift his position, he would kind of look up or down when answering questions. Those were indicators to the officer. But he didn't have any reasonable, specific and articulable fact to warrant further investigation, to warrant detaining him to do any further investigation.
Okay, but I had a question about that. What, I have a question. Why was the consent invalid? He's lawfully detained because there's probable cause to believe he's committed a crime. Why can't the officer further investigate his suspicions, reasonable or not, by asking for consent to search?
There would be no evidence of driving without license that could be found in that truck.
Why does it have to be based upon that? Can I just walk up to you and say, if I'm a police officer, and ask you, you know what, will you consent to search your house? Let me search your house. Even if I don't have any basis, if you say okay, doesn't that authorize the search?
We would submit that at that point he's been detained, right? He's been stopped for the speed.
But he's lawfully detained because there's probable cause to arrest him for driving without a license, and he hasn't been cited yet. The officer hasn't decided whether or not to give him a citation. So he's not free to leave, but that's not an unlawful detention, correct?
Not an unlawful detention up to the point where he needs to make that decision. And that should have happened within a pretty short amount of time. You decide you're going to cite him, you decide you're going to arrest him, and you do one or the other, and you're done with it. Okay? I couldn't find in the testimony how long this stop on the side of the road took. But it appears to me that if you're holding on to somebody for a long, long time, let's say 10 minutes, 20 minutes, while you're allegedly deciding whether or not to cite or arrest him. In the meantime, you conduct, you ask him for consent to search, you ask him for, you advise him of his constitutional rights. Basically, we're entering along,
Right, but I think that's the analysis where you're detaining someone based on reasonable suspicion. Then your further detention has to be pursuant to investigating the reason for the detention in the first place. But if you already have probable cause to arrest someone, then why does the additional detention have to only be based upon an investigation related to the arrest? You already have probable cause. I mean, the investigative detention, and you're trying to develop probable cause so you can arrest them. So, okay, you have to, the purpose for the detention has to be pursuant to increasing your reasonable suspicion to the level of probable cause. But if you already have probable cause, why can't you? I mean, in this case, it looks like the officer may have had some suspicion about, could be a stolen car. Why is this guy being so nervous when I shine the light? Okay, I already know he's got no license. He can't give me any ID, no Safeway card or whatever other things he asked for. I mean, isn't it reasonable for the officer to at least try to further investigate in some fashion? And what he came up with is advise him of his Miranda rights and get a consent to search, right?
If he was looking for evidence of the driving without license,
why does he have to do that? Why is his further investigation limited to the driving without a license investigation, since he already has probable cause to arrest for that?
What do you consider to be, what's the proper scope of a search incident to arrest? Assuming that he had probable cause to arrest.
Are you talking about a pat-down search or a truck search?
Both.
Okay. In this case, if the basis for the stop and the arrest, well, the basis for the stop was the speeding, basis for the arrest would have been the driving without license. He does have the authority to take him out of the car, assuming he's decided to arrest him for the DWOL and to pat him down for safety, as well as, I suppose, if he thinks that he might find evidence of the driving without license on the man's person. I mean, it's more of a safety thing. However, defense would submit that this whole notion of making a full-blown search of the truck is completely irrelevant to establishing probable cause. The whole reason that you would search or that you would investigate any further is to determine whether you have probable cause to arrest the man.
So you say once I arrest someone for a crime, or I have probable cause to arrest for a crime, I can't ask for consent to search unless I'm searching for evidence of the crime that I arrested him for?
Because otherwise it becomes just a general
Right, but a consent to search is an exception to, it's a waiver of the Fourth Amendment, so I don't have to have any suspicion to search if somebody consents.
Correct.
So why is there a linkage between asking for consent to search and the crime when the consent itself is a waiver of the Fourth Amendment?
I mean, generally speaking, that the person is advised of the reason for the search. It has to have something to do with the reason that the man is still detained. Otherwise, he should be either, you know, arrested and taken away or allowed to go on his merry way.
So you think that's the problem in this case? They didn't tell him what they were searching for. They just said, give me consent to search.
Give me consent to search, correct. And if you look at the exhibits that the state presented into evidence, although the truck search says we'd like permission to search your vehicle, it doesn't say what it was searching for.
All right, let me ask that. Follow up on Judge Watanabe. Okay, assuming that he arrested him for driving without a license.
Ab initio.
Right.
Okay.
And he's patting him down.
Okay.
Okay, he can do that, right? With weapons.
Yes.
Is there any problem in the course of the pat down, he feels the ice pipe and removes the ice pipe? You don't have any, is there any problem with that? So your problem is that there's a question of whether he would have arrested, or he did arrest him for driving without a license as opposed to the drugs.
Correct.
If he was going to arrest them and he did arrest them for driving without a license, then the recovery of the ice pipe, you don't have any problem.
Correct.
And is that under the Reed test?
Is that under the Reed test? You can search for weapons, you can search for instrumentalities of escape, and you can search for contraband. Is that, you think the pipe is contraband and therefore it's recoverable by the search.
Are you talking about pursuant to the pat-down?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I didn't hear the first part of your question, but I believe that if, as Judge Nakamura said, he was arrested for the driving without license, ab initio, and they did a pat-down to frisk for weapons, etc., they discovered the ice pipe, that's fine. That we wouldn't be here.
Sort of plain feel. He can feel the pipe and tell it's a pipe, so he knows it's contraband. He can see it.
He can see it. I see that my time is up.
Thank you.
May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Gerald Enriquez and I represent the state of Hawaii in this case. This case, essentially, the central issue here is whether there was probable cause to arrest the defendant for driving without a license. And the state would submit that there was probable cause to arrest the defendant for driving without a license. The defendant said he had no license, and at no time did he ever produce a valid license. And although the fruits of a search can never justify the initial search, the defendant would never have been able to produce a valid license because his license had been administratively revoked.
Isn't the question whether, independent of finding the drugs in the fanny pack that was suppressed, the officer would have arrested for driving without a license? Isn't that the critical issue?
They would submit that.
Because if he wouldn't have arrested him, he wouldn't have searched incident to the driving without a license offense, and he would not have felt the ice pipe.
Well, based on the facts of this case, the officer, at the motion to suppress, the officer tested, was never specifically asked whether he was going to arrest the defendant for DUI or not. He just stated that he arrested the defendant. At trial, he testified that he arrested him for driving without a license. So, essentially, there is no testimony that he would not have then arrested the defendant for driving without a license. So the state would submit that the reasonable inference, given the state of the record, is that the officer would have intended to arrest, would have arrested him for driving without a license.
Are we able to consider the trial testimony?
Yes, under the Kong case, appeal denial of the suppression motion is appeal of the introduction of the evidence at trial, so the appellate court can consider both the trial and suppression motion record.
But in terms of the trial testimony on this issue, did the defense lawyer have the same motive for cross-examining the officer that he would have had at the suppression hearing? Because the only way to cross-examine the officer would say, well, that's not right. Isn't it true you arrested him for drugs? And given the fact that the drugs are suppressed and they're in a jury trial, he's not at liberty to ask that impeaching cross-examination question at trial.
Let me see if I can understand your question. So you're saying that defense counsel did not have the same motive to cross-examine the officer at trial on that particular issue.
Why did you arrest the defendant? He didn't have the same motive to cross-examine him at trial to try to disprove that he arrested him for dropping without a license, because the way to disprove it would be to prove that he arrested him for possessing drugs in his fanny pack, something that any self-respecting defense lawyer would not want the jury to know, since the evidence was suppressed.
This is true. Let's say we admit that, yes, the defense attorney did not have the same motivation in the trial.
So does that mean we cannot consider the trial testimony in this, although there's case law that says we can in some circumstances, in this circumstance, maybe we're not at liberty to consider the officer's undisputed trial testimony on that particular issue?
Well, the state would submit that you can consider the testimony. I guess regardless of whether defense counsel had the same motive at trial as opposed to the suppression motion, there was the initial motion to suppress, which included an exhibit listing exhibit B of defendant's motion to suppress that had included the officer's police report detailing that he had placed the defendant under arrest for driving without a license as well as the drug charges. So
we don't know that he would have done that independent of drug. Obviously, if he's going to arrest him for the drug charges, he's going to arrest him for every offense that's available. He's not going to arrest him for the drug charges and issue a citation for driving without a license.
Well, he could have done so, as you so recently just pointed out. He could have either decided to cite him or arrest him. In this case, he was arrested, and given the state of the record, it appears that he arrested him for driving without a license.
Counsel, what did you think the officer had in mind when he didn't immediately arrest him for the DUI? What was his plan, do you know?
It would be mere speculation on my part, because there is no evidence of exactly why he was arrested beyond that at trial.
So are we able to make a decision in this case without that kind of evidence, or do we have to send it back for a further hearing?
I would submit that you can, based on the defendant's trial testimony, the officer's trial testimony, where he said that he arrested the defendant for driving without a license, because he was not asked at the motion to suppress what he would have arrested him for, but he was specifically asked at trial. It would seem that a reasonable inference is that had he actually been asked at the motion to suppress what he had arrested the defendant for, he would have said the drug charges as well as driving without a license.
Why was the consent invalid? Consent to search the car invalid? Because if the consent is valid, then this whole issue goes away, right? I mean, this search incident to the drug arrest and the driving without a license arrest, and pursuant to the pat-down search or a search incident to the drug arrest, you find the ice bike, no problem. What was the trial court's rationale for suppressing or finding that the consent to search was invalid?
If I remember correctly, the trial court's rationale was that the defendant did not knowingly waive his right to refuse a search of his car, despite the fact that the officer had signed the MPD Form 103 and consent to search.
Is that because they didn't tell him what they're searching for?
If I remember correctly, that was at least part of it.
You agree with that?
I mean, although that's not the issue really before the court today, I would agree with it. I wouldn't agree with it because if you ask someone if they can search your car and they say yes, it would seem to me that you're allowed to search. Now, I mean, if it was the product of a custodial arrest, let's say, or, you know, there was some kind of intimidation involved, and again, this is speculation, it may be that consent given under those circumstances is invalid. It's not valid, excuse me. But given the circumstances here where the officer simply asked him and had him sign the form saying that granting consent to search, it would seem that the consent should have been valid.
Did the consent extend to all the containers within the truck? Because the form said the vehicle, right? Search of vehicle.
This is correct. In that situation, it would have been ambiguous as to what exactly could be searched. I mean, I don't think there's any question that the vehicle and, you know, the components of the vehicle could be searched. But as far as, I'm assuming you're thinking of the fanny pack itself, whether you could search the fanny pack, I believe that the case law doesn't allow you to search a closed container without a warrant.
So it doesn't matter that he has a written consent to search, as far as the fanny pack is concerned?
As far as the fanny pack is concerned. That's I would agree. In this case, even though the evidence from the fanny pack was suppressed, we still have the piping cover from the defendant's pocket. And as we submitted before, there was probable cause to arrest for the driving without a license. The defendant said he had no license and never produced one at any time. Because that arrest was valid, the search incident to arrest would be valid. And even assuming, arguendo, that the search incident to arrest was not valid, the inevitable discovery doctrine says that as the evidence would have been uncovered during inventory search,
Was there evidence presented that necessarily that the police department would have inventory searched the person for a driving without a license arrest?
Yes, there was a trial. I believe it was a trial. The deputy prosecuting attorney asked the officer if inventory searches were performed as a normal part of the MPD booking procedure, I believe, and the officer said yes.
So that's true, even if it's an offense that's bailable. In other words, the person can post a cash bail and get out of custody.
Well, I must have made my, I'm not quite familiar with the bail procedure here, but as the police have an interest in keeping weapons and other contraband out of the jail system, it would seem that prior to actually allowing the defendant into jail, even if it's only for a few minutes before he decides to bail himself out, they would have an interest in removing whatever is in the defendant, on whatever items may be on the defendant's person. So, I would say, regardless of the actual bail procedure, it would be valid.
Let me ask you, okay, so assuming there's probable cause to arrest for the driving without a license offense, they do a pat-down search. Okay, now, you cannot search for evidence for a driving without a license offense because there's not likely to be any evidence on the person's body that would be helpful to that offense, correct?
Correct.
All right, so it's purely a pat-down for weapons.
Right.
All right. Pat him down, feel the ice pipe. Explain to me how then, from feeling the ice pipe, you get to being able to remove the ice pipe from the person's pocket.
Right. And that can potentially be problematic. In this case, I believe the testimony of the officer that said that he was 99% certain that it was an ice pipe. However, there is that small 1% chance, given, you know, as the officer so characterized it, that it could have been something other than an ice pipe. So the state would submit that, given that small uncertainty, given the officer's concern for his own safety, it would be allowed for him to remove the object from the defendant's person.
Did you say the ice pipe is a potential weapon?
He did not testify to that.
Is that what you're saying? What's your rationale? My question is, once you feel it, he recognizes that as an ice pipe, how does he get it out of his pocket?
Well, as he's allowed to remove item weapons and instrumentalities and fruits of the crime, as a side note, the latter two are not really an issue.
Ice pipe's not an instrumentality of the driving without a license crime.
It's not an instrumentality of the driving without a license. However, the officer did say he was 99% certain, but he was not completely certain. He very specifically said 99% certain.
So he leaves an ice pipe. Now, how does he get out of his pocket? What's the theory of he can remove it from the pocket?
If he believes it's an ice pipe, well, under the, I believe it's the Reed standard, he's allowed to remove weapons and other contraband from the defendant's person.
What's your definition of contraband?
Me personally?
Yeah, I mean, I struggle with what that means. Yeah.
Legally. The legal definition is okay. I would simply put anything that would be illegal under the laws of the state of Hawaii. So
to possess.
In this case, the ice pipe is drug paraphernalia, and it had methamphetamine residue inside, I believe.
Can an ice pipe be used with just regular tobacco?
Well, I would preface this by saying that this wasn't actually part of the issue at trial or anything like that, but I am unsure of whether it could be used for legitimate tobacco smoking purposes, let's say. I do not believe so because of the general state of the item, but I could be wrong. So I suppose my answer is I'm not sure.
So your position is say, for example, there was an inexperienced cop. He feels the same object, doesn't know what it is. He can't take it out. It's only the cop who feels it and can say, if I recognize that as an ice pipe, they can take it out.
Well, actually,
cop number one, inexperienced cop, thinks it's a glass tube from a chemistry class.
Well, in that case, let me see if I can clarify this. You're saying that the officer would testify that he thought it was a glass tube?
I'm trying to figure out what the legal theory is in terms of how he can take it out of his pocket.
Well, if he's unsure of what the object is, then I would argue it's a reasonable inference that it could be a weapon, especially given the tube shape. Maybe a stick, it may be a collapsible baton, it may be some sort of weapon that could be used against the officer. And I would submit that under that standard, the officer would be allowed to remove it from his pocket, purely for officer safety reasons.
Do we recognize the plain field test in Hawaii? Assuming he feels it, is that sufficient to be able to pull it out?
It's my understanding that I do not think we recognize the plain field test, although I may be wrong.
Should we?
Should we recognize it? In generally or in specific situations?
In this situation.
In this situation. I would submit that we should recognize in this situation because of the officer's experience, and he was able to locate to determine that it was an ice pipe, even though there was, again, that small uncertainty there. He should be able to recognize that it is an ice pipe, that it is contraband, and thus it should be admissible evidence, even though he wasn't necessarily searching for it at the time.
Do the rules change if it's a Terry stop, investigative stop, as opposed to a search incident to arrest?
I think it would, because the Terry stop is supposed to be as limited as possible in order to prevent the officer from invading someone's civil rights. In other words, from walking up to someone and giving a full strip search and things like that. So in a Terry stop situation, the search should be limited to at least specifically just weapons for pure officer safety reasons. Uh, I did notice that the court was asking about the objective test for probable cause earlier. The state would submit that under either an objective or a subjective test for probable cause, the...
What is it, though? Do we have to, you know, is it enough that he has probable cause to arrest for driving without a license, or do we also have to find that he would have arrested for driving without a license independent of the discovery of the drugs in the panty pack?
Well, the state would submit that it's, well, the standard is a reasonable person standard, so it is an objective standard. It's not a subjective standard. But the state would submit that in either case, under a subjective or an objective standard, there was probable cause to arrest.
We're not talking objective, subjective, whether he believes he has probable cause to arrest. We're talking objective, subjective, whether he would have arrested. In other words, if he cites the, let me go back. If he just cited the defendant for driving without a license, could he search him incident to citation?
No, because he was not placed under arrest at that time.
All right, so he can't do that. All right, in this case, my understanding of the record is it's ambiguous, at the suppression hearing at least, he never testifies that he was going to arrest or never did actually arrest the defendant for driving without a license until after he discovered the drugs. So the defense position in this case is, well, because we don't know, or their argument is that he would not have arrested him for driving without a license, you don't get to the search incident to arrest. So do we have to know? Do we have to make a finding for the evidence recovered to be valid that the officer would have arrested purely on the driving without a license offense independent of the drugs that were found in the car?
The state would submit that you don't actually have to make that finding. That
because
you can simply say that the officer had the opportunity to arrest him, and it was up to him whether he arrested him or not, and the fact that he was arrested would make the search incident to arrest valid.
But he could, given the court's ruling, he can't search incident to the recovery of the drugs, right? So he can't search incident to the drug arrest, because the drug arrest is invalid, correct?
After the suppression motion, then let me retract that.
Can the interceding event basically drive what proper search is in this particular case? And the defense is arguing that the search incident to arrest was fruit of the poisonous tree, basically.
Okay. I would argue that even if you completely take out the evidence recovered from the car and all everything therefrom, you still have the valid DWOL arrest. So even if I suppose the inevitable sub-reduction would apply here, in that because he would have been validly arrested for DWOL, he would have been searched incident arrest, or an inventory search would have been performed on his person, and thus, even if the evidence stemming from the arrest for drugs was invalid, the DWOL arrest was...
So what evidence in the record is there that he would have been arrested for driving without a license?
That he would have? Well, the officer's testimony was that he was arrested for DWOL.
Right. He was arrested for driving without a license.
Yes, that he was
arrested. He would have arrested him for driving without a license under any circumstance, independent of the drug evidence found in the car. Is that critical for us? Do we have to know that? Do we have to know that he would have arrested him independent of the drugs found in the car for the search incident to arrest to be valid?
The state would submit that you don't need to know that. The state would submit that it is enough that there was a potential for him, there was ability to arrest him for driving without a license. So there doesn't need to be a specific finding that the officer would have very specifically arrested him on the driving without a license charge. Mm-hmm.
What's the test for inevitable discovery? How certain do we have to be?
must be clear and convincing evidence that the evidence would have been inevitably discovered by lawful means.
Okay, and what's the evidence in this case, in your view?
That it would have been discovered by lawful means. The evidence would be that at trial the defendant was asked, or not the defendant, the officer was asked whether he would have, whether inventory searches were performed as part of the Maui Police Department booking procedure, I believe was the question, and he answered that it was. So it follows that if everyone is searched when they get to the police station, an inventory search would have been performed on this particular defendant and the contraband would have been found.
Okay, but before that, we were talking about whether he would have been arrested at all had the drug evidence not been found.
And again, I would just say with Smith that based on a combination of the defendant's or the officer's testimony at trial and the fact that he was not specifically asked at the motion to suppress what he would have arrested the defendant for, a reasonable inference is that he would have arrested him for driving without a license.
And that rises to the level of clear and convincing?
The same with Smith, it does.
Messing with the record. Does the record indicate whether the police officer questioned the defendant at the scene? He hadn't do a Miranda waiver. Is there anything in the record about what or whether he did, pursuant to the Miranda waiver, ask a question?
There was. I don't think the record is clear whether it was pursuant to the Miranda waiver, but there was some questioning, at least as far as the evidence recovered from the fanny pack. Not the evidence recovered, but the question of the defendant's identity, where he found the state ID card, looked at it, saw it had the picture of him.
He asked him, what's your real name? Are you Christian Diaz or whatever his real name is?
Yeah, he asked him, I found this ID that looks a lot like you. Is this you? And the defendant said that, yes, it's me.
Is there any indication that the officer was making inquiries about whether the car was stolen?
From what I can recall, no. The grounds for the defendant's arrest, that is a finder of fact decision, and it's typically not before an appellate court, although there may be some circumstances where it would be reviewable. But in this case, it's a credibility decision whether he was lying or not, and they would submit that it's not reviewable.
Finding about that because that's not part of the suppression hearing. So no one made a finding as to on that issue whether the police officer told the truth about what he arrested the defendant.
No, there was no finding as to the credibility of the officer. The time of the stop was from the record was approximately 1.5 hours from the initial stop to the license check at the station. The record is unclear as to when.
Say that again. From the initial stop
when the officer made the check on the defendant's real name at the station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so from the stop all the way to the booking at the station is approximately 1.5 hours. The record is unclear as to exactly how long the stop occurred.
Do we know how long it was from the stop to the recovery of the fanny pack?
The record is unclear about that.
Something less than an hour or whatever it took to get to the station.
And there's no evidence as to why the officer didn't do the warrant check out in the field as to Christian Diaz's name.
There is no evidence as to that.
But he was running pretty close. I'm trying to recall how many minutes the police can be out doing a warrant check in order to have a valid search, I guess, with respect to the warrants. It must have been getting pretty close to dangerous to just leave him out in the field and not take him into the police station.
It would be mere speculation on my part to say that. I'm not familiar with the length of detention.
You don't happen to know whether the Maui Police Department has any kind of instructions to their police officers as to how they should be exercising their discretion in cases where they have the authority to either issue a citation or physically take somebody into custody?
No, I have no personal familiarity with that. Well, again, the state would assert that there was probable cause for this arrest. The defendant admitted that he had no license, and he never produced a license at any time prior to the arrest. And based on that, the state would submit that the defendant's conviction should be affirmed. Do you have any further questions for me?
No.
May I please the court again? The court was asking counsel for the state questions about the officer's indecision. Defense would submit that the fact that Officer Conoscero did not decide on the spot to arrest Mr. Diaz basically constituted a decision not to arrest. The court was asking questions about whether it could make a finding about whether the officer would have arrested or ultimately, etc. But since there was no evidence about what the officer was going to do, defense would submit that the only thing you can decide is that he did not arrest him. It essentially becomes a de facto decision not to arrest.
Well, why can't we send it back for further findings on that issue? I mean, it seems to me that that issue was not really in dispute at the suppression hearing, because the setting of the suppression hearing is really focusing on the drugs in the fanny pack. Right? I mean, no one's really trying to parse out, okay, what happens if the fanny pack gets suppressed? What do we do about the search incident to arrest? So is there any prohibition against us remanding for further findings on that specific issue? Namely, would the officer, independent of discovering of the drugs in the fanny pack, have arrested for driving license?
Well, coming from a jaded defense position, I would submit that if it got sent back there, then clearly the officer would testify that, of course, he had the intent to arrest him for the DWOL all along, etc. Because since
you can impeach him with the indecision.
You can, but I mean the bottom line is that he testified at the motion to suppress hearing that he hadn't quite decided, and he didn't recognize, I guess, that indecision was going to be a critical factor in the case.
At what point does he say that? At what point in the sequence? Is it after he orders, is it already after he's done the records check and orders and asks the defendant to get out of the car? At what point does he say, I haven't decided yet whether to arrest him or not?
After he, at the point when he runs the name Kavika Silva and finds that there's no record for it and recognizes that he has a DWOL, a valid DWOL, he says at that point, he testifies at that point, I hadn't decided whether I was going to arrest him.
Okay, is that before the exit from the car and the consent to search?
I believe so. I believe that it is before the ask out of the car.
Because it was, as soon as the name came back, Kavika Silva, he said, I hadn't decided whether to arrest. He continued with a weapon scan, and the defendant was shifting his body. He saw the fanny pack sitting in between the two front seats, and then then he did the records check, and he asked him to get out of the car.
Right, so he wasn't necessarily, I mean, he's still thinking about it.
He's thinking about it.
So he didn't say, I decided to cite him.
No, he didn't mention anything about a citation. He just said that he had not decided to arrest him.
And under 803-6, when an officer has that discretion, he can issue the citation if he finds and is reasonably satisfied that the person will appear in court at the time designated, has no outstanding arrest warrants, that the offense is of a nature that there will be no further police contact. And so it requires a little bit of investigation. It's not a snap decision, right?
That's true.
So when he finds out that Kavika Silva does not have a license, and then he has suspicions about him because he doesn't write a signature very, it sounds like he's fudging his name, doesn't that give him time to make that decision and do that investigation as to whether this is a real person?
It may be factors that go into the officer's decision whether he's going to cite or arrest him, and may push him one way or the other. However, immediately, what happened immediately afterwards was that he asked him out of the car, the truck, and he directed him to stand by the hood of the patrol vehicle, at which point, of course, Mr. Silva or Mr. Diaz is not free to leave. It doesn't appear to be a weapons issue with the officer. I would submit that the weapons search or the weapons concern is a guise, because he doesn't pat him down at that point. He could frisk him for weapons. He doesn't do that. He also doesn't handcuff him, which again he could do if he thought that the man was going to run or become violent or something like that. But immediately instead he gives him this constitutional rights form and asks him to sign it, and then he gives him consent to search form and he asks him to sign that.
Couldn't he be looking for ID in the fanny pack to confirm or dispel his suspicion as to whether the driver gave him a good name or a fake name, given his nervousness and hesitation about answering and the lack of ID and things of that nature?
I think it outweighed the officer's intention, that he would say, well, there should have been a question there, like, you know, there's your fanny pack there, doesn't it have any IDs, or, you know, some kind of inquiry there. But it appeared to be clear that he wanted to get into the fanny pack because he suspected that there was drugs or other, you know, drugs or paraphernalia, et cetera, inside there. So he didn't bother with those questions, and he just, you know, got him to...
And you're saying that's no good. He can't do that.
Right. The trial court found, I was looking at the decision, they said that at the point in time when the PC for Kavika Silva's arrest was established, that the investigatory nature ended. And so to further detain him and get him to, you know, present him with these forms to sign, etc., it became, they used Keno, reference Keno.
Yeah, I don't understand why that is, though, because Keno is the consent. Keno is a case where the consent was invalid because it was the fruit of an unlawful detention. I don't see how this can be an unlawful detention since you have probable cause to arrest.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you what was in the trial court's mind, but I'm saying by analogy...
Besides Keno, for the proposition that the consent was no good because there was no need to investigate the underlying crime at that point, which made the detention invalid, which therefore made the consent the fruit of the unlawful detention. I mean, that's the analysis.
Right. And then the state didn't appeal off the motion to suppress the portion where it was granted, so we are left with that finding. With regard to one other point I wanted to touch on had to do with the inevitable discovery. After reading the Lopez case, which is our standard for the inevitable discovery, they also cite to Nix v. Williams, and they describe the facts. And in both of those cases, there were simultaneous investigations going on by different... In Nix v. Williams, there was an investigation by the police, and there was also searchers that were looking for the little girl's body. So there were two independent investigations going on. And the same thing in the Lopez case. There were two different detectives. One was investigating a drug conspiracy, case, and the other one was investigating this alleged robbery of the Jalameos. And so there were two different investigations going on. In Mr. Diaz's case, the state, I believe, argues that inevitable discovery means that the search that would have happened at the station house when Mr. Diaz went in, that would be a separate and independent investigation. However, that investigation can only occur as a result of a lawful arrest. And so really, they are part of the same investigation. They're not different investigations.
What are you saying is that we don't get to inevitable discovery if the search incident to arrest is no good, right? I mean, that's not an independent ground if the search
right.
incident to arrest is bad.
That's correct. That's correct. But the bottom line here is that basically the officer's actions by extending the detention and conducting the illegal search, they cannot serve to validate, and we can't reward the police officer for doing this by validating the ultimate arrest on the DWOL and finding the DWOL arrest to be valid. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take the matter under advisement.
Thank you.